T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Now, with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Day, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Now, it's game time. Gabe Kuhn.
Gabe Kuhn was one of the great little trivial nuggets in all of football bios. His grandfather was the inventor of the Easy Bake Oven.
Like a boss, the best lineman on the radio. Well, the only lineman on the radio. It's game time.
Game time. We're ready.
The Gabe Kuhn Show, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
How about it? It's Thursday, April 25th, 2024. In other words, if I'm putting it another way, it's night one, round one of the NFL Draft. And we're going to pass you off to the NFL Draft at 6 o'clock right here on 92.9 FM ESPN. But for the next 2 hours, you are live and local with the Gabe Kuhn Show. I am Gabe Kuhn, former Memphis Tiger offensive lineman on X at G_Kuhn71. I'm alongside the executive producer of the Gabe Kuhn Show. That'd be Connor Dunning on X at C929. Connor, how's it going?
What's up, man?
Good to hear.
People can come watch the draft and play some trivia with me tonight.
7 o'clock.
7 o'clock at Longshot.
Yes. Good food, good drink, games, trivia.
One of the best burgers in the city.
Yeah.
Straight up.
Yeah, right.
I'm one of the best burgers in the city.
You got to find a nice little parking spot, but they got parking garages.
Oh, they got plenty of parking.
You'll figure it out. It's a Thursday night.
It's a Thursday night.
Be all right.
Come
down. Get
down
there. Hang out. Have a good time. What are y'all's prices, by the way?
$70, $20, $10, $10.
Whoa.
$70. Don't quote me on that.
Okay.
But quote me on that.
Four prizes. No, I mean.
First place. Oh, actually, 5 prizes. I actually lied to you. You also get a $5 gift card for the coin flip challenge.
Rock on. We love that.
Best team name, coin flip challenge. First place, second place, third place.
Team names. You probably get some great ones. I know you
I
get
can't
great
say
ones.
Most of the
yeah,
ones
no, I
on
understand.
Air, but
I understand.
They are tremendous.
Now,
yes.
We have 2 hours to talk on the way, courtesy of 92.9 FM, ESPN, and yours truly. We're going to pass you off to the NFL Draft at 6 o'clock right here on 92.9 FM, ESPN. But between now and then, we have plenty to discuss. NBA playoffs, awards, little Tiger basketball recruiting. Jaden Quaintance, 5-star, former Kentucky commit, and signee actually got released from his letter of intent at Kentucky when Cal left. He has postponed his trip into Memphis, which was supposed to be this week. And there's another guy, TJ Bamba, from Villanova, who will be making the trip. We'll discuss that a little bit here in just a second. But we're going to hammer home the NFL draft. 4:30, Kyren Samuels, my guy from Defiant Takes. He's a former Jacksonville State offensive lineman. He has his own platform called The Pulling Guard, which is fantastic. I would tell you to go follow it on YouTube. Go follow him on at Kyren Samuels on X. But we're going to talk NFL draft with him and get to a lot of things. Chargers, what are they going to do at 5? You know that there's going to be some offensive line talk. You know that's how that's going to go. Me and Kyren Samuels, all right? We're both guards. We were both right guards in college. It's just going to happen. Get used to it. But he will join at 4:30 to talk about the NFL draft, and there's plenty to get to. A lot of rumors swirling all over the place. 5 o'clock, Jeff Calkins will join. Talk a little bit of NFL draft, but we'll get into Ja Morant and him signing with Mike Miller's agency, Lyft Sports Management, after he left Tandem Sports just a few weeks back. But there's plenty of things to talk about with Jeff. And then at 5:30, I'm going to hop in and give you my analysis and what I expect to happen in the NFL draft. And there's a lot of rumors, a lot of things going on right this second. Who's going to trade back? What picks are open for trading? Who's going to try to move up? There's a lot of things happening at this moment, and we may see a trade. We may see some things happen while we're on air. So definitely stay tuned. We may have some breaking news along the way. Then we'll get out around 5:50, send you off to the NFL draft live here on 92.9 FM ESPN. Now, I want to open on John Morant. How about that? Signs with a new agency. We know he left Jim Tanner and Tandem Sports a few weeks back. Signs with Mike Miller, Lyft Sports Management. And I think the biggest thing, sort of seeing him sign with Mike, is we get to put to bed the negative thoughts that sprung up when Jim Tanner was fired by John Morant. And the negative thoughts were, oh, Ja's hiring someone to facilitate a move at some point. He wants to be bigger. He wants someone to clean up his act. Oh, no, he's going to sign with Clutch. And we know what Clutch does, right? Anthony Davis facilitated a move. We have all these guys who always want to make moves, and we know Rich Paul can facilitate those things. Well, he didn't do that. And I think it's pretty clear what Ja wants out of Mike and what Mike wants out of Ja. It's familiarity. I can't put it any clearer than that. Mike knows Memphis. And I think Mike, more than, you know, signing deals and doing all this, you know, finding endorsements, Mike's more interested in what Ja's basketball career is going to look like from this point forward. And, you know, the big draw Tandem when he signed with Tandem with Jim Tanner is Tandem's really good at facilitating deals, you know, whether it's Gatorade or Nike, what have you. And Ja's face was everywhere, right? When he signed with Tandem, several commercials. It was Powerade. Sorry, not Gatorade, but Powerade. But he facilitated a bunch of deals for Ja, and maybe it was a little bit too much. Now he wants to move back to a familiar face. Ja wants to tighten things up, have a former NBA player in his corner, a familiar face. And let's be honest about the familiar face part of this thing. Mike Miller was a key witness in the Joshua Holloway case, right? Like he was there to see the whole thing and helped out on Ja's behalf. He also has a familiarity with the AAU circuit, so he could help get Ja's AAU team up off the ground. And the truth is, you know, Tandem, I mentioned their big draw being striking deals and getting endorsements. He's Ja Morant. If the act cleans up, if he moves forward in a positive way, striking deals won't be hard, right? They'll come to him. So I think this is a good move for all parties, and cool to see Mike add Ja Morant to a growing sports agency brand.
It was just a really cool news drop to see. You know, every time a Ja Morant news comes through the Woj Twitter or Shams, you do freeze for a moment because you're not sure what it's going to be. But it was good news. And ultimately, you know, one of the reasons you and I weren't very worried when Ja Morant wanted to move on and find a new agent was because, to be quite honest, I'm not sure his agent handled the whole, you know, controversy that Ja went through very well. You know, Ja was in the, he got hit with a lot of strays by, you know, national media. And at some point your agent has to stop in and try to protect you. And all of his deals, like, they may have fallen up, a few of them fell apart. So I think that Ja was just like, listen, I need to be with somebody, like you said, that has familiarity, knows the city of Memphis, knows the Memphis Grizzlies. And I think Ja's a very loyal person. And that's why whenever he left the agency, right, I never had any fear of that meaning he was going to leave the Memphis Grizzlies. I think that Ja just wants people in his camp, in his corner, that he can trust, especially a guy like Mike Miller who has NBA experience and NBA experience with the franchise he is currently playing with.
I think the biggest thing, though, is that he didn't sign with Clutch ultimately, right? It's really cool to see he signed with Mike Miller, but if he signed with Clutch, you think about, oh, a potential move, a potential for Clutch to strong-arm the Grizzlies when it comes to contract negotiations in the future and everything else. So that was the big
positive. I'm glad he's not with him. Yeah, I'll say that. You know?
Yeah, no, 100%. I don't know how you could be – I don't know how you could have turned him signing with Clutch into an overwhelming positive. And honestly, weirdly enough, like, their Rolodex of players isn't what people thinks it is. They just have some guys at the top that are very, very well-to-do, and they are legends. I understand that. But when it comes to sort of the new age of player, they don't really have a whole bunch of guys under their name. And Mike Miller, I mean, he started this thing up, what, two years ago? Something like that, a year and a half ago? And he is rolling, man. Paolo was the first one to drop. Now he's got Ja, and he's just going to continue to add. Because I think there is an absolute want by players to have somebody like Mike in their corner, somebody they can relate to, somebody who's not that far removed, somebody who understands everything that goes into playing in the NBA. So good for Mike, good for Ja. Let's move past that now. A little bit of NBA playoffs last night. And we started with the Celtics, the one seed in the East, playing the Heat. And it is kind of funny to me. The Celtics were the best team in the NBA this year, 64-18. Phenomenal all year. Yet they play the Heat without Jimmy Butler and they lose home court advantage. All that equaled was them getting into the first round against the Heat to lose home court advantage to a team in the Heat without their best player. 111 to 101. This is inevitably where I'm supposed to tell you that the Celtics are frauds and will inevitably fall short again this year. But I'm going to tell you I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to be like everybody else and over-examine and overhype one win by somebody of the opposition beating the Celtics. Though others seem to want to do that. Others seem to want to do that. And I think there's a lot of good NBA talkers and a lot of good NBA media members who have done this and just overreacted every single time the Celtics lose. They're frauds. They're never going to make it. They're not going to get through again this year. I go to Kevin O'Connor, and I respect Kevin O'Connor from The Ringer. I respect his game, and I respect what he does. I think he's very good at his job. But yesterday, he put out this take on X that I can't get behind. He said the Celtics would get swept by Denver. Maybe take one game due to a hot shooting night, but they have no chance if it's the Nuggets in the NBA Finals. Zero. Now, I'll say this. If it was Nuggets versus Celtics in the NBA Finals, which would probably be my pick at this particular moment, I would probably take the Nuggets. Probably in seven, though. Just because I think the Celtics, when it comes to talent and the starting five and the talent they possess, I think they're better bar for bar, player for player, than the Nuggets. But when you look at that game last night and that overreaction from Kevin O'Connor, let's talk about it. The Heat were 23 for 43 from three. 53% from three. Kristaps Porzingis probably, including the regular season, played his worst game in a Celtics uniform, and I'm not sure it's close. 6 points, 1 for 9 from the field, 0 for 4 from three. He was a minus 32 in the plus minus, and they only lost by 10. And then you also have to take into account, you know, the Eric Spoelstra versus Joe Mazzulla thing. That is a coaching mismatch. I think, you know, the player mismatch and the talent mismatch is very apparent with the Celtics being way more talented than the Heat. But when you have a coach that can make up a little bit of ground there, like Eric Spoelstra, they may sneak a game or two and some weird things can happen. And we've seen weird things happen consistently with the Miami Heat year after year. They were in the NBA Finals last year and they came out of the play-in. They're just the zombie Heat and they figure something out. I don't care if they have Jimmy Butler or not. They seem to just find ways to win ball games in playoff situations. But I do think that Mazzulla was really one of the biggest reasons outside, you know, Kristaps played his part as well. KP played his part as well, and Drew Holiday was not great on the offensive end. But I think Joe Mazzulla was one of the biggest reasons they lost that game. Eric Spoelstra was able to consistently have his team control the game from the outside. Joe Mazzulla did not have his team ready to play perimeter defense. Just warm-up three after warm-up three. And we're talking about a really good defensive lineup they have. Jason Tatum can play defense. Jaylen Brown can play defense. Kristaps, not great on the perimeter, but he certainly can block shots at the rim if you go to try to challenge him. Derek White, really good defensive player. Drew Holiday has been known as one of the best two-way point guards, if not the best two-way point guard, in the NBA for going on 5 years. So Joe Mazzulla had a chance to make something happen and not let them absolutely light them up from three, yet the Celtics allowed it to happen. And I just sort of look at some of their pick-and-roll coverages. What the hell was going on there? Al Horford's in the game. You have Tyler Hero in the pick-and-roll, and Al Horford's playing drop coverage on Tyler Hero? Seriously? What do you think, he's going to attack you at the rim and go score, Al? What's he going to? The guy takes mid-ranges and threes. That's what he does. He's not a guy who attacks the rim. Okay, but you're allowing him to get that drop coverage and have an open look from the three-point line. And then on the other side, Eric Spoelstra did a hell of a job of running the Celtics off of the three-point line. Every single guy in the Celtics starting lineup can knock down threes. Again, Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, Kristaps Porzingis, Derek White, Drew Holiday. And some of it, they just didn't knock down their threes. But also, they only had 32 attempts to the Heat's 43. That's not how that usually works out. The Heat are not a great three-point shooting team. They don't put up a lot. The Celtics are a great three-point shooting team. They put up a lot, and they didn't have as many attempts. In fact, they had 11 less. So Eric Spoelstra just outdid Joe Mazzulla last night, and then you couple that with a bad performance from Kristaps Porzingis. Things happen. This is NBA basketball in the playoffs.
Yeah, it's last night's loss by the Celtics. It's one of those great content losses for social media because it's very clear who actually watched the game and who didn't. Because for some reason, I saw Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum being blamed for the loss when they had pretty good games. At the end of the day, the Miami Heat shot 53% from three. They hit 23 threes. That is an NBA playoff record. I think it's the fourth most threes that have ever been hit in a playoff game. Caleb Martin went 5 for 6 from three.
Yeah, exactly.
Tyler Hero had 24 points and 14 assists. The gap
Haywood
between
Highsmith
Spo,
was 3 for 5.
The difference is the gap between Spo and Missoula is the Pacific Ocean. It's massive. It's massive. And last night, Spo was like, we're going to run pick and rolls with Tyler Hero the entire night. We're going to get wide open shots because eventually they're going to start trying to double Tyler Hero. They're going to play drop coverage. Highsmith's going to be wide open. Martin's going to be wide open. Jovic is going to be wide open. Hawkeyes is going to be wide open. And they were over and over and over again. Of the 43 threes, almost all of them were uncontested or wide open. It was amazing what he drew up last night. Missoula just didn't have a counter to it. He just didn't. And on top of it, Porzingis played horrifically, and Drew Holiday just kind of forgot how to play basketball in the offensive end. He was pretty good defensively,
yeah,
just
fine.
Kind of forgot what he was doing
right.
Offensively. It's kind of as simple as that. I don't expect this to happen again, but there is some voodoo magic happening with the Miami Heat. They are zombies.
It's
there
every
was a
year,
reason.
Though, too. I don't know why we act surprised.
Last night, before we did the rewind, before we got out of here, you were asking me, what game should I pick for the big game tonight? And I was like, I have a feeling in my bones that the Heat are going to do something weird tonight. I just had a
right.
feeling about it because they do have a psychological advantage over this Celtics team. It's very odd. It happens a few times. You're seeing it right now in the Lakers-Nuggets series. The Nuggets just have an edge on that Lakers team. LeBron had it with those Toronto teams. You see it in some of these series. So it was an outlier performance from the three-point line for both teams, but it's just one of those games where I'm just like, it was an outlier performance shooting, but it was because Spo is so much better than Missoula. And that is why I still have questions about Missoula moving forward. Because
right.
his playoff record is not great. It's not great. I think he's a pretty good coach. He did much better this season. He's got a better bench coaches. He's got more help around him. He's got a better team. But at the end of the day, if you can't get to the finals, there needs to be discussions to be had about Joe Missoula. I still expect the Celtics to get to the finals, and I'm like you. I would probably pick the Nuggets to win it in six. I don't think we need to overreact to the loss, but we can say it's pretty funny.
Yeah, it's
it's one of those just absolutely insane, how the hell did this
right,
happen
well,
games.
But honestly, it's how the hell did this happen, but we do this every year with the Heat. It's like I get
but
I grow
even more
tired.
So this time. There's no Terry Rozier, there's no Jimmy Butler.
I understand. I just grow I grow tired of trying to doubt that they can win a game against way superior talented team. They do it every single year, out of the play-in, when you least expect it.
Tyler Hero has had some huge games recently.
Yeah.
The man deserves respect.
He's playing ball.
He's hooping.
Playing great ball.
He's hooping.
Playing great
he wasn't
ball.
Very good in game one. But the play-in game, good Lord, that play-in game. And then game two, he was excellent.
Now, speaking of play-in games, how the hell did the Pelicans beat the
Kings
without Zion?
I don't know.
I'm going to go ahead and say this out loud, and I just got done, with flaming people for overreactions about the Celtics, but I don't think this is an overreaction in the slightest. Some people may view it as that. Pelicans without Zion are the least serious playoff team I've seen in my lifetime. I cannot put it any more bluntly. They're really bad. 124-92 to that Thunder team, and Chet Holmgren got whatever the hell he wanted when he wanted it, especially in that first half. He was the first rookie with 20 points in a first half in a decade plus. He ended with 26 points, 7 rebounds, 2 blocks, 9 for 13 from the field, 3 threes. The big three for the Thunder of Chet Holmgren, Jalen Williams, SGA, who, those are the three guys you should guard. You probably should have a plan for them going into the game. 80 points. 65% from the field, 50% from three, 90% from the free throw line. And the Pelicans have no chance. And it's not just because I think the Thunder are, mighty. I know they're the number one seed in the West. I get that. They're young. I think they still need some seasoning. And I'll get to that in a second. But I just think the Pelicans without Zion, they don't have anybody who can match the volume scoring that the Thunder have. They have no one that can do it. C.J. McCollum's over the hill very, very clearly. Brandon Ingram, he has mixed not being aggressive with not being good on the offensive end. He only took 10 shots. You're playing with a team without Zion Williamson. You have to put up 20, Brandon. You have to, or you're going to have no shot to keep up with that Thunder team offensively. They're one of the best offensive teams in the NBA this year, and for good reason. They can score from everywhere. So I can't get it. And CJ McCollum's out there getting dropped by the other Wiggins brother. Like, what are we doing? Aaron Wiggins is dropping CJ McCollum and finding somebody in the corner for an open three. I think it was Lou Dort. They just look overmatched, uncomfortable. And honestly, if Zion was on the floor, I think this whole series would be different. I still think the Thunder would win. But with him off the floor, the Pelicans look like a team that should be in the lottery this year. That's the truth of it. He hid a bunch for them this year because he was on the floor more consistently.
Yeah.
So he deserves his flowers. When you see him off the floor...
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medela is your reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Now, with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Tip, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
And what that team is, it becomes apparent that they are not good.
We've been beating this drum for a while because Zion had a phenomenal season. Truly phenomenal. We were waiting for a Zion season like this. And once he got his weight under control and he was fully healthy, he was unstoppable. And he inflated that Pelicans record, no doubt about it. It is glaringly apparent that they are in no man's land when it comes to trying to contend. Even with Zion, like you said, this team has no shot. No shot whatsoever.
They can win a, they can win a series, maybe.
CJ's, you know, he still has his moments. He's been an excellent player his career. They've got to make a decision about him.
But also with CJ, he's out of position, too.
He is super out of position.
He's a two.
Yes, he's a two, and they keep trying to make him run point guard. Brandon Ingram, don't know what the hell's going on with him. You have to move on from Brandon Ingram. He can't be your number two guy. I'm not sure he could be your number three guy. Jonas, man, that pick and roll defense is rough. It's rough. And Chet ate him alive last night.
I've almost got to this point with Brandon Ingram. I think if he's going to be a featured guy on any team, you're going to be a 41-41 team.
You're probably
going to be a team right around 500. And that's what they've been trying to do with the Pelicans alongside Zion. It just doesn't fit. It doesn't fit, and they operate from the same places on the floor. And now Brandon Ingram, with his opportunity, with Zion out of the lineup, he's not being aggressive. Well, it seems like there's a little bit of lost interest with wanting to play with the Pelicans for him.
They're an interesting grouping of players because Herb Jones, Trey Murphy, Zion, Hawkins, Alvarado, that's a solid little core group. You've got a solid little core group that you can kind of build around.
It's a fine collection of players.
Right.
But it's don't fit.
The pieces that you brought in to get you over the hump, Jonas, CJ, Brandon Ingram, they can't do it. They're not going to get you over the hump. So you've got to make a decision with those three guys.
And I think at some point, I'm a big Trey Murphy fan. I think he needs to be highlighted as one of their guys going forward. If you move off of CJ, if you move off of Brandon Ingram, Trey Murphy could be a guy who steps in there and can be a 15 to 20 point per game guy. He was 14.8 this year. Let him be that. If you give him more volume, he will be a better player, in my opinion.
The Kings need to look themselves in the mirror. And I hope they're ashamed of themselves for losing that playing game.
I still don't understand
I have
that.
No earthly idea how the Pelicans ended up in the playoffs.
Is it just easy enough to explain the Kings just were terrible offensively and they're a great offensive team that night?
Yeah.
They shot, what, 26% from three?
Yeah.
They had 15 turnovers. They just didn't look right.
But, Cabe, Malik Monk was hurt.
Oh, yeah. That's your excuse. When Zion on the other side.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's ridiculous. Now, do you have my clip here?
Oh, I do.
All right. Now, I like the Oklahoma City Thunder. I do. And I think going into the future, they're going to be a force to be reckoned with. They have just a treasure chest worth of draft assets that they can use to go find a new player. I think they're in the Nick Claxton sweepstakes to go get another big. They need another big. They need to add guys, but they have the ability to do so. And they have this great young core, unbelievable young core of SGA, Chet, Jalen Williams. Like, they have guys. But last night, it had nothing to do with what they did on the floor. But after the game and their post-game interview, I was watching it, and I couldn't help myself. I counted them out of even being a possible title contender this year because they did the group thing. They went up as a group, and they're talking about certain things. And then Chet Holmgren says this.
But I got one more thing to say. He's too humble to say it, but this is the MVP right here, MVP of the league. I'm going to say it for him because he won't say it. But that's all I got.
Buddy, it's the playoffs. Well, why are we worried about MVPs? Now, people will say I'm overreacting, and whatever. That's fine. I don't care if you disagree with my thought process here. I think you're wrong if you disagree with me, though. But doing a damn group interview, talking about MVPs when you're in the midst of an NBA playoff series, and you're that high and mighty, you're that front-running, after a game where you beat the lowly Pelicans without Zion Williamson, you shouldn't be all smiley and, oh, congratulatory. Oh, he's an MVP. That should not be your focus right now. The MVP's been voted on. It's going to be Nikola Jokic. SGA's had a hell of a year. I think he should be in the running. He should be in the top three, no doubt. Him or Luka should be at number two, whatever. Why are we worried about that? Why are we doing all this fun, happy, jumping around? It's a playoff intensity that you need to have. And they don't have it. And I think it's really because they don't know what they don't know. This does not mean I'm precluding them from being a champion in the future. It just means this year, looking at that, it shows me they need more seasoning. They need more understanding of the moment that they're in. And I'm sorry, that convinced me that this team may not be ready for the stage that they're on at this current moment, this season. Because look at the next round.
Yeah.
Mavs and Clippers. The Mavs, Luka Doncic, they've been in a Western Conference Finals. Kyrie Irving has won an NBA championship. Kawhi Leonard for the Clippers has won an NBA championship. Paul George has been in the playoffs numerous occasions. The truth of the matter is, I mentioned it, the Pelicans don't have anybody that has the volume scoring to keep up with SGA and Jalen Williams and Chet Holmgren. Know what the Mavs have? Know what the Clippers have? They have guys that can do that. So I want to see this team when they get punched directly in the mouth by one of the Mavs or the Clippers, whoever comes out of that series. Then I will be able to make a full understanding of what they can accomplish this season. But looking at how they were sort of acting after the game, I'm just not convinced that that's a team who's really thinking about what could come, what could happen, what happens when we face some adversity. So we'll see. But that did rub me the wrong way, at least a tad bit. And listen, I know that the Grizzlies did it, but I think, you know, looking back at it, hindsight being 2020, the Grizzlies doing that type of thing, I think they did it after Game 5 of the Timberwolves series, sort of the group thing, sort of proved
to
be right.
That was also after a game winner, though.
But also sort of proved to be right. You're riding this high, you're front running a tad bit, and that doesn't get you where you want to go in the NBA playoffs with a young team.
They're basically the polite version of the Grizzlies right now from a few years ago. And I think that's why you and I may have noticed, uh-oh, are they focused up? Because I texted you last night during the game, and I said, it's just the least intense playoff series I've seen in a very long time. The Pelicans are just, they just don't have it. They don't have the talent. They don't have the players to keep up. The atmosphere just, it's not there.
It feels like a regular season atmosphere right now.
But that's why when you watch like the Clippers and the Mavs, they're trying to kill each other. Like Luka was cussing at the crowd, and everybody's mama. When you watch like the Knicks series, these teams are going after each other's throats, and that's just not happening in the Thunder Pelican series. So I am curious if the change from playing the Pelicans to either the Mavs or Clippers is going to be it's going to be a lot for them. And we saw in Game One even against the Pelicans, they tightened up. It was their first big playoff game at home, and they tightened up. They were able to get by, but they tightened up. So is it going to happen against a veteran team like the Clippers? Is it going to happen against a veteran team like the Mavericks? We shall see. I still think that they have the talent to maybe make it to the Western Conference Finals. I just don't think that they're ready yet to make that jump into the NBA Finals. And what's interesting is, before the playoffs, we had questions about two young teams in the West, the Timberwolves and the Thunder. The Timberwolves in their first two games have shown me they might be real. They might be able to win it this season because the intensity that they have shown.
Anthony Edwards going directly after KD, his favorite player of all time.
Jaden McDaniel right after them. They're ready for a fight. They got punched in the mouth, and they punched them right back.
Yeah.
I just haven't seen the Thunder get punched in the mouth yet, and it's going to matter at some point.
And it will happen.
Yeah.
In the next round.
And that damn commercial. That damn commercial.
You're never going to get over that commercial.
I'm not kidding. I think the NBA is going to lose viewership because of that commercial. People are going to get so annoyed of seeing it every single time. Bad commercials.
It's corny.
It's
super
awful.
And bad.
It's awful.
Yeah.
If the Grizzlies ever do that, I'm renouncing my fandom.
Don't go that far. Come on. God. Don't overreact like that.
Oh, my God.
Now, a couple of awards real quick in the NBA awards season, even though, you know, we talked about Chet Holmgren wanting SGA to get the MVP after a playoff game. That's regular season energy. That's not playoff energy. We do have two that have dropped. A most improved player, Tyrese Maxey. Find it goofy, but this is where we trended. When John Morant won it, seems like we're trending this direction where even though we know the guy was capable of it, he takes a step up. Becomes an all-star, so we sort of throw it to him.
He scored 20 points a game last year. It should have been Kobe White.
With James Harden and Joel Embiid on the team, he scored 20 points per game. He upped that this year.
Again,
he gets it.
Harden got traded, and everybody went, they're going to be just fine because of Tyrese Maxey. We were like, that's the most improved player. What are we doing?
And then the sixth man of the year went to Naz Reid. It was the closest vote of all time for the sixth man of the year. They had the same amount. It was him and Malik Monk who won last year. Same amount of second and third place votes. And then only two more first-place votes for Naz Reid, so he won by 10 points with their point system. I think 5 for first place, 3 for second place, 1 for third place votes. So that was very close.
Good for
I think
him.
Naz Reid deserves it, man.
Yeah.
And he's still on a hell of a deal there for the Timberwolves.
One of my favorite non-Grizzlies.
Yes, he's phenomenal. He's absolutely phenomenal.
If I had a wish list, or if I could just snap my fingers and put somebody on this Grizzlies team next year, it'd probably be Naz Reid.
Now, real quick, we've had a lot going on with Tiger basketball and the portal and recruiting. We know that Barako Okoji, Tyrese Hunter have committed. The backcourt is looking full, very full. So we were talking about bigs, Jaden Quaintance, the 5-star who was committed to Kentucky. He was set to visit Memphis this Friday. He's now postponed it. I believe this was at the request of Memphis. Not of Jaden Quaintance. But it seems like Louisville or Memphis at this point, I don't know what this means. I don't think it's a good thing to have it postponed, but it is what it is. And finally, there's a guy by the name of TJ Bamba, Villanova guard, is set to visit this weekend. And he's 6'5", 215. He's a fifth-year guy. When the Tigers played Villanova and got killed in the tournament earlier this year, 13-3-2 he had on 3-for-8 from 3. Memphis and Oregon are the two that are very, very involved in this. He had 10 points, 3 rebounds, 2 assists. Those were his averages last season. But 2 years ago at Washington State, 15 points per game, and he's a 38% three-point shooter for his career, and he plays ferocious defense. So this is the type of guy that you need potentially to supplement your scoring, and he can score as well. He can be a nice spot-up three-point shooter, 3-and-D style guy, and you lose out on Aaron Scott, who ends up at St. John's from North Texas. This is the type of guy that could fill in that mold if Penny Hardaway and Rick Stansberry and the staff are able to land him. I like the fact that they're going after this guy pretty hard.
Absolutely, same. And it kind of goes back to the discussion that we had yesterday. You could have JQ for this amount of money, or you might be able to have this group of players.
Yeah, exactly. So you're just sort of in that position right now.
Yeah.
And I wonder if the postponement, they said it's not canceled. I wonder if the postponement is them thinking a little bit harder about how... Is it worth paying a 17-year-old $1.5 million to not necessarily be the highlighted player in our system because he's a big. That's not something that Penny has done very well in the past. Like, is it worth it? I think there's going to be some time that they have to sort of sit and think on that with this being postponed. But we'll see what happens with that. Now let's go ahead and grab a break because the NFL draft is tonight, and Kyren Samuels is scheduled to join. We'll talk about where do the Chargers go at number 5, where the trade's going to come from. I'll ask Kyren about who his guys are in this draft. That's all next, 92.9 FM ESPN.
Guests appear on the Smile Center Hotline. Now back to the Gabe Kuhn Show on 92.9 FM ESPN.
Could you tell where my head was at when you found me? It's the most wonderful time of the year. It's the first day, first round of the NFL draft, and I bring on Kyren Samuels, former all-conference offensive lineman at Jacksonville State. He's a writer and analyst at the Pulling Guard. He's a senior consultant at Defiant Takes Football. He is on X at Kyren Samuels. Kyren, what's up, man? How's it going?
Well, what's up, man? Happy to be here, man. A long time coming to get in the draft day, so happy to finally be here and get it going.
Yes, sir. I'm hyped up, man. I am hyped up. So I'm just going to get right into it. This is my biggest question, and I think it's the biggest question for just about everybody. Everybody's talking about trades and who could be trade partners, the Rams moving up, other teams moving up, who's going to move their pick. But I want to know what the Chargers are going to do at 5. Because that is the most, I mean, right out there, Jim Harbaugh gets this job. We know he hired Don Yee, moved from Michigan, did the whole thing. He wants to sort of make the L.A. Michigan West, if you will. He wants to try to sort of change the thought process of how they run that team. It's very obvious they need wide receiver talent. And they will have a chance if they want to take a wide receiver, whether it's Marvin Harrison Jr. if he drops, or Malik Nabers, or Roman Dunsey. They have a chance to get one of those guys. But why does it feel like they're not going to do that at all?
I guess you could just go with a little bit of the Harbaugh identity stuff. I mean, you look at what his calling card has been over the course of his career. It's always been a very run-heavy team with the physical offensive lines and very, you know, high quarterback talent level, but not necessarily always having to lean on those guys. So they haven't always had dynamic skill players around those quarterbacks. So it's been heavy running back and offensive line late. And so I think you might end up seeing a little bit of that tonight. I mean, there's been a lot of talk about, you know, maybe the prospects of Joe Alt at 5, even J.C. Latham out of Alabama at 5, which to me is extremely interesting considering the makeup of their offensive line right now. I mean, you have an all-pro left tackle who's, yep, I believe he's 22 or 23 years old. I'm not 100% sure on his age, but he's very young. And then you have a right tackle in Trey Pickens who you just pay, a multi-million dollar contract. So it's interesting to me that they would even be considering offensive line, but if any coach would do it, it's Harbaugh.
And it's kind of funny to see, like, the conversations that are had about Jim Harbaugh. They go back to the 49ers, and they're like, oh, well, he never took a wide receiver early. And what I say to those people is, well, he had Michael Crabtree and Anquan Boldin already there with Vernon Davis at tight end. They say the Chargers don't have that makeup. I mean, Mike Williams is gone. Keenan Allen's gone. They need tight end help. It feels like if there was ever a year for him to finally go ahead and say, I want a wide receiver early, it's this year. Josh Palmer is their lead guy right now. And I understand maybe there's a thought process out there that, you know, wide receiver classes since about, you know, 2012, 2013 have been deeper just because we have more air raid concepts, guys run more of the route tree, they're more talented than they ever have been, and maybe you could snag one in the second round. But I still think you're taking a massive chance if you wait later in the draft and don't take one of those big three at the top of Roma Dunsey, Marvin Harrison Jr., and Malik Nabers.
Yeah, I'm 100% with you there. I mean, especially having a ton of levers there at 5. Presumably, you're going to get, you know, quarterbacks that go in the top 1 through 3, maybe even 1 through 4, maybe all quarterbacks. What we're hearing, McCarthy may be a trade up, which we'll probably get to later. But
yeah,
at 5, you're going to have, you know, the pick of the litter there. Maybe Marvin Harrison Jr. is off the board, maybe. But being able to pick between Roma Dunsey and Malik Nabers is an incredible spot to be in, especially when you have a talent like Justin Herbert at quarterback. You know what you're going to get from Herb. And he's never really had a fully healthy number one wide receiver his entire career. I mean, Keenan Allen will be there. Last year was the first time he's had, close to a full season with Keenan Allen. Mike Williams was also always hurt. So he's never had a fully consistent number one guy. And being able to potentially get that, especially after you've already paid him and invested in the offensive line, on the edges at least, it would pay dividends, I believe. Like you said, if they were ever going to draft a wide receiver high, this will be the time and these are the players that you want to draft when you do those.
One of the biggest concerns I have about the Jim Harbaugh experience with the Chargers and seeing, you know, Justin Herbert getting the 5-year, $262.5 million deal, which he fully deserved. Let's not make any mistakes about that, regardless of playoff success or perceived lack of playoff success. I get the sense that he almost is going to quiet the skill set of Justin Herbert. I hope I'm wrong on that, but hiring Greg Roman as the OC, if he doesn't go wide receiver tonight, it just feels like you're quieting a skill set that's one of the best in the NFL.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's funny you say quieting the skill set. It's just, if you look over the course of Herbert's career, right, he's been carrying the load at an unprecedented rate. Through the first four seasons of a career, he scored more points than any other quarterback in NFL history. And the defense has given up more points than any other defense in the same facet. So it's like there's already this weird balance with what his production is versus the impact. And then you get a guy like Harbaugh that comes in and presumably is going to quiet that even more. It's just going to be interesting to see the dynamic. And that's why I'm dying to see what the pick is going to be here at five, because it's going to go a long way into showing us what the mental makeup of this next regime is going to be. Is it going to be business as usual and really, really focus on the offensive line and the run game and clock control, low risk situations, getting ahead of the sticks? Or is it going to be, hey, we have arguably a top four or five quarterback in the NFL. Let's go get one of these dynamic pass catchers, or even propose a trade back type situation and get a Brock Bowers a little bit later. I wouldn't be mad at something like that, a scenario like that, where at least you give Herbert a safety blanket and try to rely on the depth of the wide receiver and later in the draft, like you said. So it'll just be interesting to see where this team goes makeup-wise.
Now, his quarterback in college, J.J. McCarthy, he said he's the best thing since sliced bread, absolutely loves him, best quarterback he's ever been around, has the potential to be the best quarterback ever. That's what Jim Harbaugh said, not me. I'm not saying that. I'm just going to leave this open-ended. What do you think about J.J. McCarthy ultimately?
I think J.J. McCarthy is a solid prospect, right? I think he has a ton of stuff that you love. He has the measurables. He has a cannon of an arm. Does he have the versatility in terms of arm talent? That remains to be seen. He has a cannon. He can throw the ball deep. He throws the ball hard. But you haven't seen a ton of touch throws on tape. You haven't seen a ton of outside-the-numbers throws, opposite hash throws. There's a lot to be, desired, right, when you talk about his tape. So I think the prospect of him is great, but the actual proof we have of him being
right,
an elite quarterback is very slim to none. So my thing with McCarthy this entire draft process is I am not out on him and I'm not in on him. And
right,
I think anybody who has a strong opinion about him, either way, is pretty much lying to themselves.
Well, it's
the
just,
difference is
keep going.
We used to see those quarterbacks go second round, third round,
right,
not top 10.
Right. Is like Will Levis? I hate to say it. I don't see that big of a difference. Besides the winning, it's not that I don't think J.J. McCarthy can do it. Like, it's not that. I haven't seen him do it. So if you take him with a top 10 pick or a top 15 pick, you're projecting he's going to be able to do the things that you expect of him. But we have not seen it yet. And it's very bizarre how this is all spun, because I think also, and I'll get to this part too, J.J. McCarthy gets a lot of credit for winning, whereas Michael Penix Jr. is sitting right there. He won a hell of a – what has Indiana done since he left, right? And he took Washington into the national championship game last year. That is a certified winner, and we've seen the touch throws, and we've seen him get through his progressions, and we've seen things like that from him. So I think the conversation – around those two prospects in general, it's a little bit hypocritical, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. In terms of the winning makeup, the quarterback mentality, the leader mentality, there's a guy by the name of Bo Nix who has all of that. I mean,
right,
took Auburn, beat Alabama his freshman year, won SEC Freshman of the Year over Derek Stingley. He had a little bit of a rocky road there, but they were still winning 7-8 games. And then he goes to Oregon, and they're in the Pac-12 championship 2 years in a row. Or excuse me, they're in the thick of the Pac-12 hunt 2 years in a row. They're winning major bowl games. It's just... I think when you have those type of runs that McCarthy had, it kind of gets elevated a little bit. When you get a 15-0 national championship season, they're going to put a little bit more gas on the hype than normally. But I think people are probably settling in and finally like really diving into this tape and really breaking his game down. So it's interesting to see the discrepancy between kind of the media where he is now and then some of these betting lines, which have him,
right,
you know, locked in at 2 and 3, which is very interesting.
Yes, it's and also I saw it odd for the Chargers to take a quarterback with their first pick, which would presumably be J.J. McCarthy. It went from 100-1 to 6-1 as of yesterday, which I don't think in any world will ever happen. There's some rumors that just need to be dead on arrival. If the Chargers drafted J.J. McCarthy and traded Justin Herbert, one, they take a $63 million dead cap hit and a $44 million loss in 2024, and also it would be a very stupid move in general, and Jim Harbaugh would be on the chopping block before he even ever coaches a game. But that's beside the point. Talking with Kyren Samuels, at Kyren Samuels on X. This is going to be an offensive-heavy draft, isn't it? I mean, we're looking at, I looked at Daniel Jeremiah, who's usually very good at sort of predicting how the first round's going to go. He had 21 offensive players, and some people say it could get as high as 23, 24, depending on the run that there is for wide receivers and offensive linemen.
Yeah, man, it's one of the deeper offensive drafts I can remember. And, you know, people have talked so much about the quarterback depth, right? There's a presumed six quarterbacks that could go in the top 50 picks, which is unheard of. But when you look at the offensive tackle depth, it's pretty incredible as well. I mean, you look at guys like Joe Walt, Olufoshanu, Troy Fatanu, Talisi Fuaga. There's just so many guys. J.C. Latham out of Alabama. We could see six or seven tackles go in the first round of the draft as well. And I don't think you're going to see any running backs go right in the top 32 picks. But I don't think it's far-fetched to say that the running back run starts around, you know, 50 or 60 there. We get a big run on running backs in the second and third round. So then we talk about the wide receivers. I mean, we talked about Marvin Harrison Jr. ad nauseum. We talked about Malik Nabers, Roma Dunze, A.D. Mitchell. I mean, even guys like Ladd McConkey and Ricky Pearsall have gotten late first-round buzz because of their offseason and the body of work there. So it is a very talent-laden draft offensively, and I think it's probably the biggest discrepancy between offensive talent and defensive talent I've ever seen in the draft. So I think we're going to get a huge run in the top 100 on offensive players.
Now, I just want to ask you, you do some good work when it comes to just sort of breaking down your top five guys at each position, your sleepers and everything else. Let's start with like sort of your can't-miss guys here in the first round, guys that you draft, immediate impact, they're going to be great players in this National Football League from game one all the way to the end of their career.
I mean, it sounds a little bit, you know, obvious, right? But I'm going to go with some of the wide receivers, right? You have Marvin Harrison Jr., Malik Nabers, Roma Dunze. I think those are three can't-miss guys. I really do love everything about them. I think their game translates very well to the NFL level. And then I'm going to, like, very easily segue here to the offensive line.
Yep.
I think Joe Alt is going to be as safe of a pick as there is in this draft. I feel the same way about Olufoshanu. I think both of those guys are going to be can't-miss Pro Bowl level tackles pretty much from the start. I think they're going to have a very successful career. And then, you know, kind of thinking about the defensive side of the ball, I am as high on Byron Murphy and Johnny Newton as anybody. I can't believe we're not talking about those guys more because I think they're going to be home run, potentially all pro level guys in the next 3 to 5 seasons. I think they'll end up there. And then kind of in the DB rooms, Kerryon Arnold to me is a guy with his versatility. I think he's going to find a home, and I think he's going to excel. And I truly like Kool-Aid McKinstry and Kamari Lassiter. I think there's something about press man corners when you're able to be on an island like that in college when you're going to be facing some of these guys that they play in the SEC. I think that translates well. And we've seen enough examples over the last, 8 to 10 years where those guys who excelled in press man coverage in the SEC have translated that over to the National Football League and had very successful careers. So I think they're next up in that line.
And Terrion Arnold is one for me that I really like. And I know this is going to sound corny. It's about the mental makeup, right? I remember 2 years ago, the guy was a reserve for Nick Saban's secondary, and he was getting cooked, and everybody got after him. There was the big famous thing of on the sideline, Nick Saban getting after him, and he just took the coaching in stride. And then he takes it last year and is a Thorpe Award finalist, and he's right there as one of the best DBs in the country. Like, I like the turnaround he's had, the ability he has, and also, like, the mental makeup I can't look past.
Oh, absolutely. It's kind of crazy. We talk about, him sitting his first year, and then he beats out a guy that is going to probably be a top 100 pick himself in Kyree Jackson, the Alabama transfer that landed at Oregon the past two seasons. And he's shot up draft boards. He had a very good week at the Senior Bowl and ended up finishing his career nicely at Oregon. So when you have that type of mental makeup to beat out a guy like that, right, and then take the coaching, like you said, be one of the leaders of the team, one of the corners of the phrase length. You know, they had their team meeting after the USF game, and everybody talks about him being one of the leaders of the team along with Jalen Milroe and really taking the reins. And that's something that's really, you know, uncustomary of Nick Saban teams. You don't see him really favor guys that much, but even, as much as he got on to Kerryon, he was the first one to sing his praises and really you know, exalt him in terms of his love for him in the media. So that's a very rare thing when you see Saban really go after a guy like that and put him on a pedestal in the media. So I think that says a lot about who Kerryon Arnold is as a person outside of how great he is as a football player.
Now, last thing for you, and I think this all sort of fits in the same category, and we can talk, you know, day two, day three, whatever sort of comes to mind for you, but sort of the sleepers, the underrated guys heading into this draft, your guys, the guys that you really have watched their tape may not be getting the same amount of talk as some of the guys in the first round.
Well, this guy may end up going in the first round, but I still don't feel like he's got enough of love, and that's the Duke offensive lineman, Graham Barton. Man, this dude is as versatile as they come. He played a full season at center for Duke, and then he kicks out the left tackle, and he's one of the best left tackles in college football for the last two seasons. I think he's a guy that potentially could go in the first round, and he should go in the first round, but he's a name that you need to get familiar with. If you're talking about a future All-Pro, potentially at multiple positions, I think he could play guard or center, potentially even tackle in the National Football League. Graham Barton is one of those guys, and there's another guy, offensive lineman. You know, I'm an offensive lineman, so I'm going to stick with those guys. You know, his name's Christian Haynes. He's a guard out of UConn. I think he should be the first guard off the board. I think he's going to go anywhere from 45 to 65 in that range. But he's a guy that has All-Pro potential, in my opinion. He's as stout as they come against the pass, and he's a very aggressive, and he's a people mover in the run game with a great base. He doesn't trip over himself. He's not on the ground very often. It's very rare that you see a balance of aggression and being able to be an athlete and the pass set ability that he has. So I'm really excited about those two guys, and I think people should really be happy if their team ends up with either of those guys.
Graham Barton, I think Steelers, Cowboys need to take a hard look in the first round.
Yeah.
That's, I mean, you need interior line help. You need a center, potentially, that could be an all-pro caliber guy. Look at that guy. I mean, he's I love him, too. I love him, too. So we have that in common. But, Kai, enjoy tonight. We'll catch up soon.
Awesome, man. Appreciate you. I'll be back soon.
Yes, sir. That's Kyren Samuels, former all-conference offensive lineman at Jacksonville State, writer and analyst for the Polling Guard, and also a senior consultant at Defiant Takes for their football side. Again, on X at Kyren Samuels. Now, let's go ahead and wrap up hour number one, and hour number two is going to be on the way, and we start it every single day with Jeff Calkins. Today's no exception. He's next.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode and catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.